Okay, let's unpack this. You sent us this stack of material, and it really drops us right into, well, a pretty unsettling scene in Hanoi.
Yeah, a body found floating in the lake, and right away, you know it's more than just some accident.
Exactly. It's the kickoff for this book, The 3-9 Line by David Freed, and it just spirals, doesn't it? Secret missions, old grudges, big international stakes.
Definitely. So, our mission for this deep dive.
Right. We need to pull out the key threads here, figure out who's who, understand the players, and, really get to the heart of the mystery these pages lay out.
Get you up to speed fast.
Pretty much. Get ready for a shortcut to being well informed about. Well, it turns out to be a really complicated week in the life of this guy, Logan.
And complicated is the word. The source material, it wastes absolutely no time setting that scene. You've got this body discovered really early morning by some old women near bridge supports on a lake in Hanoi.
And the local police reaction, it tells you a lot right off the bat, doesn't it, about the bureaucracy.
Oh, yeah. They're just grumbling. Paperwork, looking down their noses at the Department of Public Security guys will take over anyway.
Cursing the tourists they thought it was at first, and even the old women for, finding him and ruining their morning.
It's just an inconvenience to them. They literally tow the body to shore in a little wooden skiff.
And the description of the body itself is so specific.
It is.
Yeah.
Elderly Asian man, stocky build, gray hair, missing one shoe, the other's a black Oxford, gray polyester slacks, sport coat, white shirt.
And this very distinctive red tie, single yellow star on it, plus a bunch of military decorations, like a dozen.
But the kicker, the thing that says murder loud and clear, a hunting knife sunk right into his sternum, up to the hilt.
Yeah, that knife just changes everything. No accident here. This was deliberate, violent.
And the cops on the scene, they give him this nickname right then and there,
Mr. Wonderful.
Which is just, wow, macabre. Sets a weird tone, like this isn't just another death. No standard reverence, that's for sure. So from that stark scene in Hanoi, the story pivots. We meet our narrator, Logan.
And his life now, it's the complete opposite, almost deliberately mundane. His office is this tiny windowless storage closet.
In an old World War II hangar, right?
Hmm.
At Rancho Bonita Airport, he rents it from a mechanic, Larry Croft.
And his work seems pretty low-key, too. Flying lessons, just an hour here and there for new pilots, conference calls for nonprofits.
Including cat rescue.
Yeah, a feline rescue agency. Flying some rich clients around, like a movie star he wasn't impressed with. Sometimes whale watching trips. It's just miles away from his past.
Which we find out about pretty quick because the sources, they reveal Logan's a former pilot, A-10 Thunderbolt for the Air Force.
And that's not even the half of it.
Not at all. More importantly, he was with Alpha, this disbanded tier one counter-terrorist group. Their job, their mandate wasn't capture. It was revoking jihadists' get-out-of-jail-free cards.
Which basically means killing them.
Pretty much always resulted in deaths, yeah. So this guy has operated the absolute top level of covert ops, violence.
And this quiet period, this mundane life, it's also marked by some personal stuff. He's grieving someone, Savannah.
Adds this emotional layer, right?
Yeah.
Explain some of his detachment, maybe.
Yeah, and he's turning down dates, like a blind date his landlord, Larry's wife, tried to set up.
And Larry himself, the source, gives us this great visual. Mechanic, landlord, just lost like 80 pounds from gastric bypass.
But still a big guy, apparently, originally 320.
Right. Unkempt beard, thick Buddy Holly glasses, old 49ers cap, and this t-shirt smeared with hydraulic fluid.
With the math joke, four out of three people struggle with math. Perfect.
It just paints this picture, this quiet kind of eccentric life he's built, which makes the next thing, the call, even more jarring.
The call comes from Buzz, old buddy from the Alpha days.
Buzz is running his own small new covert outfit now. And this isn't like, hey, want a job? It's a demand. Logan needs to come in now for a mission tied to that dead guy in Hanoi.
Logan's reaction is interesting. He has to reschedule stuff, obviously, but you sense this immediate jolt. Adrenaline. Purpose, maybe.
Like he needed it, especially after losing Savannah.
And there's total trust in Buzz, implicit, even though Buzz sounds like quite a character himself.
Well, Buzz is gruff, demanding. The source even says his greeting is, how's your scrotum?
Seriously?
Yep. Laughs like a snorting pig. Instructions are minimal. About a week. No weapon needed initially, and then that little kicker. Hopefully.
Okay, hopefully is not what you want to hear in that context.
Tells you right away, this is serious stuff. Logan's back in the game instantly.
But before he goes, one last glimpse of his current life. His neighbor, Mrs. Schmilbitz, Maybe his landlord, too.
Seems like it. She offers to feed his cat, idiot.
And tells him about her scientific experiment. It's totally bizarre.
The cat thinks he's Donald Trump.
Yeah. Won't eat cat food. So she tricks him, puts tender vittles in a Whole Foods tuna salad container, makes a whole show of spooning it out.
That's just, yeah. A detail you remember. Perfectly shows the weird reality he's leaving behind.
And the journey back into that secret world. Another big contrast. He's on a private jet. A Gulfstream.
Flying under the name Dr. Bob Barker. Not exactly subtle.
Right. The source describes the luxury, swank cabin, leather recliners, fancy wood tables, satin sheets.
He even kind of reflects on it, right? Feeling important versus his, like, Buddhist attempts to keep his ego in check.
And the flight attendant calls it a government flight, offers him fancy bottled water.
So where does this top secret government flight linked to a murder in Hanoi actually land?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, okay. Not exactly Langley or some secret island base.
Nope. And the office itself isn't what you'd picture either. It's just some corporate cover. Generic. Maybe GM Employee Relations, maybe United Airlines Support Services. Just normal.
Inside, too. No high-tech command center. Just regular people. Young, casually dressed, in cubicles. Quiet. Very un-Jason Bourne.
Totally. But the briefing, that's where it all connects back to Hanoi. Logan meets Buzz again and this guy Arvid Hoxson.
And they reveal who Mr. Wonderful really was.
Yeah. Turns out he was a former guard at the Hanoi Hilton, the infamous prison camp. And not just any guard, a sadistic one, known for beating prisoners with a tire iron.
Jesus. And he was back in Hanoi for some kind of reunion dinner?
Yeah, part of this trade deal delegation, promoting international commerce. And then, boom. He ends up dead in the late.
And this is where it gets really messy, politically and personally.
Because two former American POWs, guys named Stoneburner and Cohen, are being held. House arrest in Hanoi, suspected of involvement.
And there's a third guy, Billy Hallady, another former POW. He got out of Vietnam before they could detain him, but got picked up when he landed back in the U.S.
Right. And now the Vietnamese authorities, they want Hallady extradited. They're threatening the whole trade deal over it.
Big problem.
Hmm.
The U.S. doesn't have an extradition treaty with Vietnam, so it's a standoff.
Which brings us to Logan's mission. On the surface, it sounds almost benign.
Deceptively simple. Go to Hanoi, use the Dr. Bob Barker alias, and assess the psychological well-being of Stoneburner and Cohen.
Buzz tells him the cover includes being a psychologist, gives him a reason to talk to them.
Makes sense. But who do they give him as an interpreter?
Get this. Nguyen Phu Dung, a former North Vietnamese fighter pilot. Shot down American F-4s back in 71.
Wow. Okay. Logan must have freaked.
Oh, yeah. The source says his reaction was basically, enemy pilot, what kind of operation is this? Total shock, distrust.
But Buzz just shuts him down, says Phu Dung is fully vetted, DIA, CIA, the works. And basically he says, look, we don't get to pick and choose our assets right now. Real politic.
Exactly. So operational security time. Buzz gives Logan this untraceable phone, supposedly NSA proof. Direct lines to command.
He has to ditch his wallet, all ID, and gets this whole new wardrobe.
The ultimate business casual disguise. Mm-hmm. Dockers, conservative shirts, suede Rockports.
Argyle socks, sweater vests.
And his grandfather's boxer shorts, apparently. Level of detail is something else.
It really is.
Yeah.
So he's prepped, he's covered, he arrives in Hanoi, and the city hits him hard.
Oh, the description is intense. Hot, humid, hazy, just frenzied, overcrowded. Narrow streets like Bourbon Street in New Orleans, he thinks.
And the motorbikes. Endless motorbikes. Traffic like that old Frogger game. Yeah. He's also struck by the fact that nobody gives him a second look, him being a foreigner, which was very different during the war, apparently, when captured pilots were paraded.
His hotel, the Yellow Flower, sounds like an oasis in that chaos, though.
Right. Old quarter, stylish, modern, marble, chandeliers, nice lobby. And even though the POWs are held there, no obvious security presence outside.
Very low-key. The staff seemed normal, too. Doorman with Elvis hair, eager clerks, and the manager, Dan.
Who has a West Texas twang from Texas Tech Hotel School.
Yeah.
In Hanoi, you can't make this stuff up.
And young female clerks. Kara with purple glasses, knew he's pregnant. Logan checks in using the Dr. Bob Barker passport and Visa Buzz gave him. All seems smooth.
But he has encounters almost immediately in the elevator.
Right. Attractive Asian woman, early 40s maybe, stylish pantsuit on her BlackBerry. They chat about the BlackBerries. Her accent sounds maybe Singaporean or Hong Kong British. She mentions fencing, law school, divorce from an investment banker.
And Logan, even though he's still grieving Savannah, he's drawn to her. They make plans to meet later.
Then down in the lobby area, he runs into this other character, Lydia, described as looking like Janis Joplin, and her husband. They're waiting for their room.
And Lydia is super talkative.
Very, but that conversation gets cut short. Colonel Trung Tan Sang arrives.
Ah, the man in charge. Short trim, silver hair, dark green uniform, lots of stars, Ministry of Public Safety, walks in with a lieutenant.
Logan drops the chat with Lydia, goes right up to him, demands to see the American prisoners.
And Sang pushes back immediately. This is not America, asserting authority.
But he does grant access, acknowledges Logan's official cover, the letters from his own government, but sets a deadline, 4 days. Then the men get transferred, Logan gets kicked out. The clock is definitely ticking.
So Logan goes to interview the detainees. Starts with Virgil Stoneburner.
Finds him just pacing in his room, in his underwear, agitated, sweating, clearly hates being there. Regrets the whole trip. Worried sick about his wife.
Baz already called her, right? Yeah. Using the Dr. Barker cover.
Yeah. So Logan tries to calm him down, reassure him. Doesn't mention the 4-day transfer deadline, obviously.
Then he sees Steve Cohen. And it's a completely different vibe.
Night and day, Cohen sitting at a desk, legs crossed, perfectly dressed, country club casual, calm, resigned almost.
Accepts the whole psychologist ruse, makes jokes about having time to iron.
And he recognizes Logan, calls him Cadet Logan, the smart mouth. Ah. Turns out Logan was his student back in the day. They even mentioned tapping code, hinting at their shared prison past.
But then Cohen gets serious. He talks about the torture, what Mr. Wonderful did to him at the Hilton.
It's brutal, beaten with a tire iron, and that thing with his arms tied behind his back so tight his elbows touched, guards standing on them. Just horrific pain until he confessed.
Establishes a hell of a motive for revenge right there. Decades of simmering hatred.
But then later, Cohen seems anxious. He pulls Logan out onto the balcony, says they need to talk where nobody can hear.
This is a huge turning point.
Absolutely. Cohen drops a bombshell. Says Stoneburner lied about going to bed after that dinner. He was actually hammered drunk at the hotel bar.
And talking about killing Mr. Wonderful.
Explicitly said he was going to pay back the guard, had a folding knife on him, argued with Cohen, called him a coward when Cohen tried to talk him out of it, then stormed off towards the lake.
Wow. And Billy Halliday and his grandson left around the same time?
Shortly after, yeah. Cohen says he kept quiet before because, well, Stoneburner was still alive, didn't want to implicate him. But now, it puts Stoneburner right there, armed, angry, with intent.
Okay, so Logan goes back to his room, runs that anti-bug app again, the Angry Birds thing.
Yep. Still nothing. Room seems clean. He calls Buzz, updates him. Buzz is feeling the heat, but Odie says people are breathing down my neck. Needs results, fast.
Buzz emails him the file on the grandson, Sean Halliday.
Right. Another potential player. Sean's file shows kind of drifting. Menial jobs, a misdemeanor battery charge, shoving a girlfriend, pot possession.
And he claims emotional issues. Rage over his grandpa's torture.
Exactly. Clear motive there, too. The photo shows a heavy young guy, angry eyes, blonde hair, Marine Corps tattoo, Semper Fidelis.
So Logan now has Stoneburner looking guilty, maybe Sean Halliday with motive. He arranges to meet his interpreter, Fu Dung.
At this place called the Giddy Up Bar, described as a hot, sweaty walk from the hotel, Fu Dung seems on edge.
Wary, like he's constantly checking for surveillance. He even tells Logan they're checking on you, says he knows many people, doesn't drink alcohol, very careful guy.
He confirms Logan's being watched by the government, but then gives him some solid intel about the murder itself.
Like the cause of death.
Confirms it was bleeding out from the knife, not drowning, no water in his lungs. He actually saw the autopsy report. Notes the body was found north of the bridge around 5 a.m.
And this is where that location thing becomes critical. The Metropole Hotel, where Mr. Wonderful was last seen, is half a mile southeast.
Oh, the wind.
The prevailing winds on that lake would push a body south. Finding it north means it didn't just drift from near the hotel. Someone deliberately put it there, dumped it on the north side.
A clear attempt to mislead. Point the investigation away from the south side, maybe away from the hotel, away from the POWs.
Exactly. Points to planning, not just a spontaneous act of rage.
They also dig into Mr. Wonderful's life after the war, and it's surprising.
Became a businessman. Car parts, apartments, successful.
Yeah, apparently quite well off. And people who knew him later described him as, like, kind, honest, never talked about the war, his family, friends. They couldn't believe the brutality allegations. The official Vietnamese line also denied major mistreatment. Quite the contrast.
So Logan and Fu Dung go visit the widow.
find her squatting by a hibachi. Old lady speaks only Vietnamese. Phu Dung translates. She thinks they're from the insurance company at first.
Which leads to another clue. Mr. Wonderful was killed the very night he was supposed to buy a life insurance policy, Cathay Life, with $46,000.
Widow gets half, $23,000. Suddenly, there's a potential financial motive floating around.
What else did the widow say?
She mentioned a possible girlfriend, back to yet Snow White, apparently a popular singer, but claimed not to know her address. More concretely, Mr. Wonderful had been getting hang-up calls and found a dead chicken slaughtered on his motorbike.
A definite threat. Classic warning sign.
And she suspected this guy, Jimmy Luke, knew about an affair Mr. Wonderful was having with Luke's wife, but Mr. Wonderful wasn't worried, said he had many friends to protect him.
Implying he was paying off the police.
Pretty much. She says everyone in Hanoi pays off the police. And she gives them Jimmy Luke's address. A religious curio shop. Logan notes that Van, the other former guard, also knowing this address feels off. Why would Van know it?
Ties Van closer to Mr. Wonderful's potentially shady dealings, maybe.
Seems like it. Anyway, back at the hotel, Logan keeps his date with May at the bar.
She seems sharp. Asks if he's really a psychologist. Skeptical.
Yeah. They flirt. She asks if he's married. He says he used to be. They set up dinner for the next night. Logan admits internally he's still grieving Savannah. But he's attracted to May.
Runs the bug check again in his room.
Still clean. Later, Mai comes to his room. They sleep together. He feels more alive, but Savannah's still there in his thoughts. May leaves early next morning for meetings.
So the next day, Logan heads to Jimmy Luke's shop, the religious curio place.
Meets the clerk, Lynn. Young woman, braces, studying tourism, speaks some English. Logan buys a little Buddha statue just to look around.
And notices the photos on the wall. Vietnamese celebs posing with this guy.
Short, flashy dresser, gold chains, cold, hard eyes. Mm. Logan guesses it's Jimmy Luke. Thuggish Jimmy Luke.
He tests it.
Yeah, just drops good old Jimmy into the conversation. Lynn's reaction, just a subtle flinch or something, confirms it.
But then things get dramatic.
Lynn comes back, clearly upset. Logan finds her in an alley. She blurts out that Jimmy Luke is dead. Says he told her not to talk. Police drive by. She panics.
Logan gives her money. Tells her his cover name.
Tries to help her stay safe. Tells her Barker, Yellow Flower Hotel. Asks if he's Jimmy's friend. Logan admits he lied about that. She calls him a liar. Bolts.
And Phu Dung is right there, outside the shop.
Yeah, hanging up his phone real quick. Logan instantly suspects Colonel Tan Sang tipped Lin off about Jimmy's death. Phu Dung confirms it. Jimmy Luke was murdered, or had him murdered. Phu Dung says he was looking into the insurance angle.
Which brings us back to that. Phu Dung got info from an insurance broker friend, Quang.
Confirms the details. Mr. Wonderful killed the night he was buying that 46K policy. 23K payout to the widow. Phu Dung floats it again. Maybe that was the motive. Kill him for the insurance.
But Logan's still not buying it. Not for a high-ranking guy like Tan Sang.
Right. He thinks bigger. What if Tan Sang and Mr. Wonderful were business partners? Car parts, apartments. And Tan Sang killed him to take over the whole operation. That's a motive worthy of a corrupt official.
Makes more sense for that level. Mm. And just as Logan's putting these theories together, things escalate fast.
He gets back to the hotel. Bam. Grabbed. Two guys, horse face, Mr. Postcards, and Colonel Tan Sang himself.
Zip tied. Burlap sack over his head. Thrown in Tan Sang's black Lexus. Driven off.
Ends up in a house. 22 Calback Sun Street.
And Phu Dung is there too, captured, beaten.
Yeah, Phu Dung looks roughed up. Tan Sang starts right in, accuses them of working for the CIA, linked to nefarious individuals, claims he has photos, proof.
Well, won't show them.
Nope, refuses to show the photos, won't say who the individuals are, then kicks Logan's chair over. This is not America, here you are, nothing. Classic bad guy stuff.
But Logan doesn't fold, he bluffs.
Mm-hmm.
Hard.
It's audacious. Threatens Tan Sang with a drone strike. Predator, Hellfire missile. Claims he's microchipped by the State Department. Says JSOC and SD will come looking if he misses his check-in. Even mentions the two old guys back at the hotel.
Does he bring up the knife again?
Yes. Asks Tan Sang if he collects knives, playing on info he got from Carl Underwood, implying the murder weapon could be his. Then, the masterstroke. He offers Tan Sang a bribe to release the POWs.
Basically calling his bluff, confirming right. He knows Tan Sang is corrupt, motivated by money.
Exactly. And incredibly, Tan Sang lets him go, just says, get out.
But then Logan finds out about Stoneburner.
Right. He learns Stoneburner was injured. First reports are vague, slight meltdown, injured on the sidewalk, but it was serious.
Later revealed he was shot during a staged escape attempt.
Yeah. So Logan calls Buzz. Stoneburner's in bad shape. They need solid evidence against Tan Sang, like yesterday, which leads to this incredibly bold
The
plan.
fabricated evidence using satellite photos.
It's almost sci-fi. Hire a commercial satellite company, get quick aerial shots of 22 Kaobak Sun Street, then get the NRO, the guys with the spy satellites, and Photoshop wizards to doctor them.
What are they adding?
Infrared images, supposedly showing Tan Sang and Carl Underwood Jr. inside the house, plus a time-stamped photo of Tan Sang's Lexus parked out front. They even add Tan Sang's name, date of birth, height, weight onto the infrared image of him. Pure fabrication.
Wow. Okay. So Logan takes his fake evidence straight to Tan Sang.
He's brought to Tan Sang's office, shows him the photos on his phone, walks him through it. Here are the women inside for my real photo. Here's the infrared of you inside, Colonel. Grainy, but it looks like him. Here's Underwood. Here's your Lexus parked outside last night at this time. Shows him the license plate close up, states the address, 22 Kaobak Sun Street. Just lays it all out.
Does Logan mention the mistake?
Yeah?
The car parked the same way in both photos.
The source says Logan realized it later. It's unclear if he pointed it out or if Tan Sang just crumbled under the pressure and missed it.
But the bluff worked.
Completely. Tan Sang just deflates, shoulders slump, Adam's apple bobs, stares out the window like his world just ended, confronted by his own mortality, as the source puts it.
And the immediate result?
Buzz calls, ecstatic. They're letting Cohen go. We fly out tonight.
Huge win. But Logan feels.
Hollow. Because Stoneburner's dead, it wasn't a clean win.
So Cohen is free,
Yeah.
but Logan needs the full truth. He goes after Carl Underwood Jr.
Finds him at a restaurant, gets him alone, shows him that real photo he took, the one of the women inside 22 Kaobak Sun Street.
And Underwood cracks.
Confesses Tan Sang runs a human trafficking ring out of the house. Young women, and Underwood's involved. Why? Money troubles,
That too.
GS-12 salary, wife spending, kids. Decided to peddle flesh on the side with your friend Tan Sang.
Just awful. But that's not all he confesses, is it?
No. He admits he killed Mr. Wonderful, wore gloves, and then the clincher admits he planted that tiny speck of paint on the knife handle.
The aquamarine paint from Cohen's boat.
Exactly. Oil-based, waterproof, high lead content, probably Chinese-made. He planted it specifically to frame Steve Cohen.
Why frame Cohen?
Because he thought Logan was CIA, sent to get the POWs out. Underwood figured if he framed Cohen and maybe planted other confusing clues like Tan Sang's car near the lake, it would create chaos, a stalemate between the US and Vietnam. And maybe, just maybe, that confusion would force the Vietnamese to release both Stoneburner and Cohen. It was a desperate, twisted plan.
Wow. Okay, so Underwood killed him and tried to frame Cohen to save them both.
That was his twisted logic. And the final pieces fall into place when Cohen is flying home with Logan.
Cohen tells the full story that night.
Yes. Confirms everything about Stoneburner being drunk, angry, having the knife, planning revenge, arguing, storming out. Admits he held back to protect Stoneburner while he was alive.
So let's put it all together now, all the threads.
Stoneburner. Motive, yes. Means yes. Had a knife. Intent, yes. Stated it, but didn't speak Vietnamese. Unlikely he knew Mr. Wonderful's specific routine.
Billy Halliday. Motive, maybe. Means unclear. Doesn't speak Vietnamese either. His alibi checked out.
Sean Halliday. Motive, yes. The rage. Means possible, but also doesn't speak Vietnamese. Seemed genuinely shocked by the murder.
Which leads.
Steve Cohen. Motive. Absolutely. Deep-seated from the torture. Means could have gotten Stoneburner's knife after the argument. And crucially, speaks fluent Vietnamese.
Meaning he was the only one likely to know about Mr. Wonderful's late night walks by the lake. Maybe you overheard guards talking about it back in the day or found out somehow.
The conclusion from the sources points squarely at Cohen. He killed Mr. Wonderful, likely used Stoneburner's rage and knife as cover, then fed Logan partial truths to implicate Stoneburner, maybe the Hallidays, and finally manipulated Underwood, maybe setting him up to take the fall or ensure Cohen's own escape.
Master manipulator, cold-blooded.
And the consequences are devastating. Underwood, after confessing everything to Logan, quotes Buddha, "The way is not in the sky."
And shoots himself.
Just tragic. And Stoneburner, dead. Shot in that staged escape attempt that Cohen clearly orchestrated to silence him or add to the confusion.
So Logan returns home, back to Rancho Bonita. It must feel like another planet.
Totally. Mrs. Shmulevitz greets him, tells some kitty at the cat has a girlfriend now, some mangy stray, says there truly is somebody for everyone, offers him chicken soup. Back to reality.
You check his messages.
Cat rescue deleted, hangups deleted, student pilots, robocall deleted, and then a message from Alicia Rosario.
The homicide detective from San Diego.
Yeah. Savvy, seductively earthy, the source says. Met her on another job. Mutual attraction, but Logan held back because of Savannah. She wants flying lessons. He keeps her number. A little hint of maybe moving forward.
Maybe. We see him transition back. Renting these funny cars, a Fiat 500 Clown Mobile in Salt Lake, paid for by the GM cover, then a Camry in L.A.
He visits Billy Halliday, the third POW in Redlands. Billy's infirm, on crutches. Knows Logan suspected him, denies it, confirms again, no Vietnamese. Seems genuine.
And Logan flies his own plane, the Ruptured Duck. Great name.
Sun-faded yellow and orange, old avionics, ragged seats, but reliable. Flies it to Monterey, meets Buzz's team there, Hirsch and Mercy. Mercy runs the tactical side.
The Monterey Marina. Described as this little community, older weekend sailors. He even talked to some drunk sailor asking a riddle. Setting the scene for the end.
And the final scene plays out there. Cohen's boat slip. Cohen's there with Carl Underwood.
Cohen frisks Logan. Finds his gun.
Yeah. Underwood takes it. Logan tries to talk them down. And that's when Underwood gives his full confession, quotes Buddha, and kills himself. Logan finds Cohen later, dying on the sidewalk nearby, shot in that staged escape. Logan reflects on it all. Underwood's sad end, letting go of guilt, contrasting it sharply with Cohen's calculated destruction.
So, yeah. What does it all mean? We started with what looked like maybe an accident, maybe a simple crime, a body in a lake.
But guided by Logan, through these sources you provided, it just unfolded into this incredibly complex knot. Decades of war trauma, international politics, trade deals, revenge, corruption.
And even human trafficking.
Right. And this cast of characters. Logan himself, witty but haunted. Buzz, the gruff handler. Mr. Wonderful, the sadistic guard turned victim. Tan Sang, the polished official with a dark secret. The clerks, the prisoners.
Each grappling with the past in different ways. And you see how appearances just crumble. The fancy hotel hiding detention. The calm prisoner hiding murderous rage.
It really shows how tiny details matter, doesn't it? The wind direction on the lake. Who speaks what language. That speck of paint. How a car is parked in a photo.
Yeah, this wasn't just a whodunit. It was about layers. Motive, deception, consequences stretching over decades. The lines blurring between victim and perpetrator.
It really makes you stop and think, you know. How much is buried under the surface? What secrets do people carry? And can you ever really get justice when history and personal demons collide like that? It's a lot.
It is deep. This deep dive, well, it's certainly given us plenty to chew on. Thanks for bringing the material to us.